to an episode of Bubba in the Bloom, episode 82. We're back at our home bases, and we're here to continue our recaps of the positional 2023 baseball. Going to shortstops tonight. It's going to be fun. But before we get there, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, a lot better next to me recording the show, not on the screen next to me, but he's on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Agreed. It's a little bittersweet to be back in our, well, my basement, your room, recording virtually because last week was so damn fun. But I'm doing great. I'm still riding the high of first pitch. I don't know about you. Like Sunday was rough. It was just a culmination of not much sleep, a lot of beer and laughs and whatever for the conference. And I don't know. Just I know everyone's kind of sick of everyone talking about it, but it really was just a freaking awesome time. Just like, I don't know, invigorating. We get to speak with everyone in the niche. We put our phones down and just hang out, drink, laugh, play golf, watch games. It was everything that I think we hyped it up to be. Had a great time, man.
And more, I'd be willing to say.
Probably more. Awesome. Yeah, with some of the stories we were telling before
the shenanigans. The shenanigans. Yes. Super Troopers would be proud. Farva's favorite place was that first pitch shenanigans. Like Roger Bloomfield says in the chat, well, it's been a few days. How are you living with yourself after ripping off a couple of 9-year-old kids? If you guys don't know what it's all
about, go
check out the Bubba and the Bloom Twitter feed. You'll get a clip out of that and then come at me because I think I'm still not in the wrong there. So that was great. But yeah, Paz was awesome. It was a full week. The World Series ended since we were last there on that Wednesday night, right before the conference game 5 in Arizona. A lot of us were at the game. I was shocked. Like, I thought there'd be a few of us here and there. Next thing you know, it was like every section had at least 2 to 4 people for like a 6-second area. It was pretty cool to hang out there and kind of kick off the weekend in that regard. But
how was game 5? I mean, you were there. Like, I was jealous. I flew over the stadium. Didn't see you.
I saw your tweet.
But yeah, how was it?
It was good. It was good. That was good old Frankie Stanfill of CBS Sports. That was fun. The stadium is. We were up there. Let's put it that way. We were up there in the upper deck. But it was still cool. Like World Series games. I've been to 2 with the Giants and game ones, and I'll never forget them. We've told that story on here before. It was just fun, kind of not having a horse in the race, but watching like Zach Gallen have a no-no going in like the 7th, and he had that curveball just flipping. It was amazing. Eovaldi didn't have it, but he made it work. It was great postseason pitching by Eovaldi because the D-backs should have lit him up in the first 3 innings. They had so many chances, but Eovaldi is just that grinder, man. That's why he shows up on Bloom boards, and he just he got the job done. And then it came down to a few plays here and there, and the Rangers were the better team this go around. And the D-backs will be fine. They're young. They're going to be loaded. But being there in person was awesome. You know, watching Bochy get another title. It's kind of Boch will always have a soft spot in my heart. Like that dude, I won't talk about it on the air. We've talked about it off the air. He shouldn't have left San Francisco. Let's put it that way. But always a Bochy guy. So it was good to see him take one down and watch Corey Seager win one without Dodgers uniform on. So that was cool as well.
For me, it was surreal. I think I've said this on the show a couple times, but Josh Spores is from my hometown. And I graduated and played with his older brother, Jay, who was a first-round pick, actually, with the Tigers. So it was surreal to see Josh Spores, who I remember as like a 4-year-old, 5-year-old kid, coming to my games, or really his brother's games. But to see him close out the World Series was like just – mind-blowing to me, just given where how long I've seen him. So that was cool. It was your seats, it was funny. You can tell the you can tell how high paying and lucrative the fantasy baseball industry is, because every every analyst picture was like the second row from the back. But whatever, yeah, we're in the upper deck, just to get in there, man. Tickets were expensive, and you were right, you were pretty right behind home plate, right?
A little bit pretty darn, like one section over from like home plate. So it was, you could see everything pretty good. It was really cool. Like in home run the 9th, like you could see it all very, very well. I will say this to Rangers fans, well behaved. I was thoroughly impressed by the Rangers fans. They played it very, very, like 2 guys in front of me, a couple in section over. They were like, congratulate. When the D-backs did something good, when the Rangers started to take the lead, they were cheering, but like very respectfully. They could have easily just been like, complete dicks. I've seen that in so many other sporting events, and they were not. I give them.
Were they out there in numbers? Were there?
a decent amount. They're kind of scattered around the upper deck. They might have oil money, so they might have been farther down, and I missed them. They didn't have fantasy ass money, but it was like I said, the ones that were there though, good people. I could watch a game with them anytime and be cool. So I was very impressed. Like I said, I've been to Stanley Cups, I've been to World Series, like any game. Period. It doesn't have to be a World Series game. You get around certain fans, and it's no fun. So it was impressive. Like winning the World Series, I could see fans easily just blowing it, and they did not. So kudos to Rangers fans. I'll say that much.
Absolutely.
We have an announcement. If you don't follow Bubba the Boom on Twitter, I'll give Ryan the phone. This one talks so much already. Ryan, what is the announcement we have?
The announcement we have is we love doing. We're sick enough to do this one time a week and enjoy it as much as we do. We're going to double down. So we're going to starting next week, twice a week episode. So probably Tuesday nights and Thursday nights. Thursday nights is like a hallmark of the week. So always keeping that. We're going to add Tuesday nights to the mix. And I think we've got plenty of content to be able to keep it fresh and keep things going. But it's exciting. We want to, I don't know. We really want to, we've talked about this for a while, but really want to start building this out as we enter, I guess, like year three-ish of the podcast. And the way to do that is not only to kind of get more active, and we've been doing clips and everything from previous shows or First Pitch.
Ryan's been doing clips. Ryan has been doing clips. He's very good at, not me.
Yeah. Last week I called you at the live show. I called you the marketing guy, but really I'm doing a lot of
the clips. You're doing it. You're doing
it. It's fine. But no, we want to build this. We enjoy doing it. Most importantly, we want to build this out. It was really cool at First Pitch just to kind of not just do the live show, but hear from you all that listen regularly. And we appreciate that. And we just want to keep it going. So twice a week going forward, really, I think indefinitely, probably in season. We'll talk about kind of the in-season plan, but expect us Tuesday, Thursday night, and then Wednesday and Friday mornings hitting podcast feed. And I hate doing this, but as we build this out, we need your help. So if you can rate and review the podcast, either on Spotify, Apple, wherever you can do that. We almost never like show for this kind of stuff, but I guess it does help. So it does, it as we're putting help. More into this, we want listeners to get more out of it and help us out as well. So if you can, we would be greatly appreciative.
Yeah, it sucks to show. Like, I've done millions of podcasts of my own and I hate doing it, but in the end, how the algorithms work, unfortunately. So it's just one of those things. Get a couple seconds out of your day. Really does not take long. We would truly appreciate it. As we start getting more and more rates and reviews, we'll start giving out stuff. I've done this on other shows. Like when you start getting to like 50 and 100s, like we'll give stuff out. I got no problem with that at all. There's where the marketing guy comes into play. So
sign baseballs or are we going better or worse than that?
We'll see. Let's see who rates and reviews first. Let's talk about that. Prove it and make me have to come up with something. Maybe I'll go to the San Jose Giants games next year. There's got to be some kids running around. And I guarantee
you. Julios.
Oh, we got a box of Julios right there. Look at that. Oh, I finally saw the gnome. Now that you
mentioned the Masters gnome. I know, that is, talked about the gnome at First Pitch. I'm not giving that thing away. That thing's legendary. I do have a baseball there too. It's not an AFL ball, but I don't know. Yeah, think of stuff.
There's plenty of stuff we can do. So you guys help us out, we'll make it worth your while, I promise.
Yeah, but no, excited. I'm excited for it, man. Yeah. Twice a week. We're just getting the groove even more and see where it goes.
Yep, we'll see how long Ryan can handle me. So it'll be good. It'll be real good. Let's have some fun now, like we weren't already. But we'll keep our recaps going here. We'll go to the shortstop position. And as usual, we talk about the top 30 ADPs, then where they finish according to the Fastball Player Rater. Then we'll throw some late round guys that really didn't even get drafted. And you'll be there's always a handful that's going, wow, like I'll give a hint here. I even texted Ryan yesterday when he sent this over. I'm like, Orlando Arcia was the 23rd ranked shortstop last year. That's all I'm going to say. We'll get to why this, that, but it's just that's why I have these exercises. Like, we'll do the 2024 previews in like another month or so. But what's fun about these is going back, like we've talked about, you know, you see certain positions like second base. If you got one of the top guys really good, it was a mess after that. First base similar, but there was pockets of good, but like going into the season, the pocket we thought was good, not so good. So it's kind of fun to look back. Catcher's just great. You can draw what you want with catchers.
Well, but, you're a little biased there. Side note, quick first pitch anecdote.
I saw
Bubba in the flesh. In the flesh, we're listening to a panel, and Bubba's going through every roster resource page and handwriting every single possible fantasy relevant catcher for the Black Book, right? This is what this was for. Yep. You just do this for fun. Look at this thing.
Yep.
Look at that.
It's up there, folks.
So you had 49. I think 49.
49. Yep,
49 catchers. I look over and Bubba's just writing catcher names and just like happy as hell. You were in your element, man. It was impressive.
He takes a picture, which made me laugh. But what started it all is he looks over at my computer and goes, Omar Narvaez.
Yeah.
I'm like, yep.
You wrote his name down. I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
I had the Fangraphs page up, and Ryan's like, Omar Narvaez. And I'm like, hey, gotta go deep here. I gotta see if he's even half relevant. Cliff note, not relevant.
Yeah, there's the picture. Here we got for the YouTube crowd. That's gonna come out terribly, but there he is, just on roster resource. That probably was Narvaez. And then left hand, this like giant notepad with just catchers.
Hey, as they say, that's where the magic happens. It's where the magic happens, guys.
I don't know who says that outside
but,
of you.
Maybe I should do it for other positions. It might help me out in the future. But we're here talking shortstops. So without further ado, unless you have anything you want to add to this.
So you're Orlando RC. I mean, we'll talk about that in a little bit, 23rd. But this is the value of recapping this stuff. Orlando Arcia was 23rd. Anthony Volpe was 22nd. Like, to me, that's and again, we're using Rasball Player Rater 5x5 to kind of determine these ranks. But like, from the hype that Volpe got compared to the crickets that Orlando Arcia got, it's just interesting to see those guys finish side by side at the end of the year. But yeah, we'll talk about those guys a little bit later. What we're looking at on the screen again for the YouTube crowd and to shill. Visit the YouTube page, like the YouTube page, and it's a good way, I think, to consume the podcast because we do put the board up while we're talking about it and kind of reference it. But as we've done the last few positions, we've done catcher first and second. You're looking at the top 300 or the top 30 preseason ADP at the position, and then comparing that with the end of season rank per Rasball, and then we color coded average homers and steals just so we can kind of get a quick at a glance look at what the position did in general. And I took out some guys that just aren't relevant for next year, or like Mookie Betts was the top shortstop technically, but A, he wasn't drafted as a shortstop, and B, he's not shortstop eligible next season in most leagues, so took him out. But in general, this is what the pool will look like, and it's just, yeah, I thought very boomer bust with shortstop this year. Like, there were a lot of hits and a lot of not so much. But
yeah, the top six or so are pretty solid. Then it gets into a rocky place. Yeah. Let's start at the top though. A guy that many people, as the season went on, but Trey Turner finished in a big way. First season in Philadelphia, maybe he had some adjustments to make. He was the first shortstop off the board at an ADP of 2 at the season's beginning. Finished still fourth, though. And I think it just goes to show you, when you steal 30 bags, hit 26 homers, even only hitting 66, it was a strong season for Trey Turner, all things considered. And you throw in, he scored 102 runs even, which is a plus. What's your thought, Trey? I think most people are like, okay, he finished strong, we're good. But maybe some are still skeptical. I don't know. You got him at the turn early draft. I will say this much. And there's been 11 DCs finished so far. And Trey Turner is the second shortstop off the board with an ADP of around 9 or 10. So what do you got on Trey?
Selfishly thrilled I got him at the 15, 16 in our early draft, because that's not going to happen again. Not really worried at all. Like, this is somebody who we, and Brian Rudd had his forecaster box on our team, which, by the way, Bubba, accomplishment today, we finished our team's player boxes, which is like a huge,
so that's huge why relief. Corbin tweeted out those nice words about you. That makes sense now.
Finally let him off the hook, and he thanked me. We're 2 weeks away from release, so there's that. Yeah. But Trey Turner, like, the box was fine. Like, the second half rebound was fantastic. The steals are still there. He was a perfect 30 for 30 on stolen bases. Like, hit 280 in the second half. I'm not worried at all about Trey Turner. I think you're buying a quote unquote dip if you get Turner in the middle first round, the top 10 pick. I think that's a no brainer given the track record and the five categories. Like, so there's just, I don't know. It's an easy pick for me.
No doubt about it. The shortstop that is going ahead of Trey Turner is Bobby Witt Jr. He was the AP of 9, second shortstop off the board, finished first at shortstop this past season. He's got an ADP of between 3 and 4 now, which is funny because, like, last year everyone was wondering, okay, like, is Bobby Witt worth the first-round pick? That was a big discussion point in draft season. Is he worth the first-round pick? Well, when you finish hitting 276 with 30 bombs and 49 steals, I think the answer is yes. And he made other improvements as well, Bloom. So what do you got on Bobby Witt Jr.? An amazing sophomore season, and he's only 23. He'll be 24 this year.
And that's the thing. And so, like, first off, so we'll tell you all when we're right, the guys we like William Contreras, and we'll tell you when we're wrong. And for me, Bobby Witt, that was my, like, I don't know, everyone's picking a first rounder to avoid. For me, it was Bobby Witt. Just because the track record and the plate skills weren't quite there. And damn, man, was I wrong? Like, so yes, Bobby Witt not only powered up, went from 20 to 30 home runs, not only did he ride the wave of the stolen base rules going from 30 to 49. For me with Bobby Witt, it's the year two plate discipline improvements. The K rate went down 4 points from 21 down to 17. Fewer whiffs, fewer chases, more walks. Like, everything beneath the hood looks elite for this guy. 12% barrel rate, like, the power is there. And Kansas City just lets him run wild. I don't see that changing at all. So, like, Bobby Witt, I would take over Trey Turner. I think the market's right, 1-2. But damn, man, what a freaking season for Witt. It was funny, the last weekend I was following this because I was neck and neck with Dr. Roto in labor, and, like, stolen bases mattered. He had Bobby Witt. Bobby Witt was trying like hell to get 50 stolen bases. Witt had 15 caught stealings. I swear, like, 10 of those was in the final weekend. Wow. It just was not happening. He could not get to 50, but he tried like hell.
The best part about that, though, is that means they just, hey, he has a green light, which is beautiful.
Oh, so yeah.
Go run, kid. He does. That shouldn't change, which is a great takeaway from that as well. The third shortstop with an ADP of 13 finished 12th at the position. So not quite what you're hoping for is Bo Bichette. Now it's a conundrum of things because, you know, he got hurt. So he only played 135 games last year compared to his previous 159 after back-to-back years. He did hit 306, which is great. 20 homers, but you mentioned Witt took advantage of the new steals environment. Bichette only had 5 steals. And yes, some of the injuries involved leg situations, but there was a concern with Bichette, like, a few years ago, that he doesn't run in the pros, the minors, doesn't run. Then he goes and steals 25 bags in 21, drops to 13 last year, dropped to 5 this last year. So what's your thoughts on Bo Bichette, who's the 7th shortstop off the board right now? He's falling in compared to years past. I'm not saying they're wrong because he's not getting the steals, but what's your thoughts on Bichette?
I mean, Bichette was the only one of the, and I feel like we say this with almost every position, like, the market's damn smart. 5 of the top 6 shortstops return top 6 value. That's really good and really hard to do. Bichette was the only one who didn't. Bubba, like you said, finished 12th. So, like, not a terrible season. Like, I mean, he did hit 306. It's almost like a valuation thing where, like, how much is Rasball weighting batting average versus the lack of counting stats? Because if you do hit 306 near the top of Toronto's lineup, like, that'll play. Also, it's 70 or 69 runs, 73 RBI. But, like, I do not understand the, I mean, injury is the only conceivable thing I can think of why Bo Bichette in his age 25 season would just stop running with the new rules. So it's always a double-edged sword, man, too. Like, okay, if we do blame it on the injury, is it just going to magically go away and next year he's going to run wild? Or is it something else? Bichette had knee problems in 2020. This year it was a quad and a knee thing. Like, can we expect Bichette to go right back to, like, 15 stolen bases? I'm not sure we can. And so it's just, it was definitely to get 25 home runs plus steals from Bichette and 600 plate appearances was pretty shockingly bad. It was my big takeaway there.
Yeah, look at his sprint speed. It's 42nd percentile sprint speed this past year.
Yeah, so it's like he's like an old man out there, dude.
Yeah, that's not something you want to see from someone at Bichette's age. He's 25 years old. Like that's a he's running still faster than me. I'm not gonna say I'm that fast, but he's taking a dip like he would be a guy like me running around bases, is what I'm trying to say. So that is definitely less than ideal. I should find some
We saw some of your sprint speed out at Dobson Ranch, cart path only. You had to jet out there a little bit.
For a big guy, people are shocked I can actually walk a lot. Like I can actually move around and do things because I don't mind it. I'm just I carry most of my weight in this thing called a beer belly, and it's just a problem I got to get over. But yeah, maybe Bo and I can go through some similar training. We'll see. The next shortstop, 19th ADP, fourth shortstop off the board, finished sixth position last year. He will not be shortstop eligible this year, just so people know.
Yep.
But he was definitely drafted as a shortstop this past year. So that's Fernando Tatis Jr. And this was a year, I'll be honest, like I was concerned because of the shoulder. And I guess he outperformed expectations, but he still didn't dominate to the level. He finished with 25 homers, 29 steals, which is great. He only hit 257, so like the power was down, the batting average was down. Still a good season, but I guess for what I guess the expectations for Tatis all the time, I expect more from Fernando Tatis Jr. Now it could be a year removed from the injury; he's better this past, next year, definitely an option. But what are your thoughts on 2023? Where I was like, okay, he was good, but you still like towards March, you had 19th DP, he's a mid second round player. And yeah, he finished great at shortstop, but is that enough for you? I guess the steals made it enough, but it was kind of tough for me.
It was enough. I mean, the big thing with Tatis was the batting average, and he only hit 257, but did cut down quite a bit on the strikeout rate. Went from 28 down to 22%. That's a huge improvement. So a lot of that was BABIP driven. We forget, or maybe we don't forget, but remember Tatis when you drafted him. Entering 2023, you knew you were going to miss 3 weeks. And so it's almost a test of like valuation. Tatis finished sixth with missing 3 weeks. What did you get those first 3 weeks? Because you could plan for it in drafts. You knew you were going to get 3 weeks off. And and it was even better than that. So like Tatis almost from like a when he was active on your roster plus his replacement level was probably a top five shortstop. And I don't really have any qualms first round next year. Wrong.
I'm actually probably more on him next year coming up here. Cause like a year removed from the shoulder thing, given he still never had surgery. That always scares me. Cause like, you're just wondering what's going on. Like that's why I said it from the beginning when we were doing the show way back when I'm like, just get cut on, get it fixed. Make sure we're good to go. He's so young. I just want you to like fix it. The older guys I get, the young guys make it happen. So that's always going to be a concern, but the fact he went through a full season, I guess you kind of got to notch it up to that. So I think we're in that regard. All right. The next guy is a guy I'm very high on coming into this year. You will have to pay for him, though. He is the fifth shortstop off the board in 2024. But in 2023, Francisco Lindor Jr. hit an ADP of 33, the fifth shortstop off the board, finished second at the position. This was year two or three with the Mets. Still 29 years old, he'll be 30 this year. He hit 254, 31, 31. He had a 30-30 season. I believe it was the fourth Met to do it. I talked about it on the First Pitch podcast when it happened. It was third or fourth Met. So it's going to be great for Lindor. I'm a big fan. Jeff's in the chat saying Tatis had surgery, but I don't think he had the big shoulder surgery, did he? Wrist surgery. Yeah, check it out. What's your thoughts on Lindor, though? Because I love the improvements we saw this year to get kind of back after – you know, he went 26-16, 20-10, kind of good seasons, but not what you expect. Or he was back to the way he was with the Guardians late in his, late teens seasons, 2017,
18, 19. Quietest 30-30 season, at least for me, at least, that I've, like, ever – I mean, I feel like I learned today that Francisco Lindor had a 33 season because like,
and, you know, good friend Ryan Bloomfield doesn't listen to my other shows. There you go.
And I obviously did not listen to your nugget on the First Pitch pod that day, but must've been a Monday. I didn't listen on Mondays, but I did not realize that at all from Lindor. And that was definitely a, Like, he did not run, let's see, stolen base opportunity, which we look at HQ, was 23%. So basically a quarter of the time that Lindor was on first with an open base in front of him, he was running. That was the highest of Lindor's career. So this is somebody, and an 89% success rate. And that's a thing, like, and I just finished it today doing a stolen base recap for the forecaster. The stolen base success rate of just over 80% this year was the highest it's ever been in baseball. And so the break even point on steals is roughly like low to mid 70% as to where it's like worth it to steal. And I think what we saw so much in Lindor is like exhibit A of this. If you're stealing 90% of the time successfully, you're just going to keep running because that's the incentive. And that's it's the plus EV play to keep going. And Lindor took full advantage of that. So it is just interesting when we compare that with Bo Bichette, again, injuries aside, to see which guys surged and which guys did not in stolen base department. Francisco Lindor in 2022 had 16 steals. Bichette, I think, had 13. So they were basically the same.
Yeah, 13, yeah.
Bichette's like 4 years younger than Francisco Lindor. Lindor stole 26 more bases, which is huge if you were deciding between those two. And it really weren't even. Bichette was a first rounder. Lindor was early third rounder in the 30s with ADP. Just a huge season for Francisco Lindor.
And Lindor's fantasy value was tremendous. Honestly, finishing second at shortstop is very, very good. Like, I think he deserves that. Obviously, Bobby Witt was better, but big fan of Lindor. That's why I took him on the 2-3 turn in our early draft. I think he maybe doesn't go 30. I think he can go 30-30. I think he can, but I think he's still a very, very solid asset. Real quick to Jeff's point, I was wrong. Fernando Tatis had shoulder surgery in September of 2022, and he had two wrist surgeries. So he's been cut on a few times. So let's hope that's a good thing and good to go in that regard. We have another person jumping in the show, Bobby D.
Robbie D. Pietro asks
how your handsome men are doing. Yeah,
not to continually bring up first pitch, but I'm going to do it anyway. Not only was Rob really cool to meet in person, I never met Rob before in person. His crew, man, the three brothers, met deep. His wife, just fantastic.
Yes, the DiPietro crew. That was a blast. I can't wait to do that again.
Look forward to the DiPietro family podcast at some point.
Yeah, sometime soon. Talking baseball cards and everything else. Next shortstop off the board is your World Series MVP. They even created a stat, an October stat, about Corey Seager. If you guys saw that on Twitter, that's pretty interesting. He had an ADP of 61, shortstop off the board, finished third overall. And this is what is impressive, because we've talked about all these other shortstops outside of Bichette. They stole bags. Like, there was a big part of that. Seager hit .327. He was Freddie Freeman at the plate. 33 homers, only two stolen bases. And Freeman Seager never steals. 2-3-1-1-1-0-4-3-2. Those are all his careers. Like, he just doesn't steal, even in a new steals environment. But the 29-year-old hit .327. By far, the best of his career since 27 games in 2015. Like, he's dominated. What's your thoughts on Corey Seager, who you are definitely paying a premium for now? He's pick 20, third shortstop off the board. But in 2023, he earned every bit of it. And it's an L for me. I always just avoid Seager because I'm worried of the injuries and this, that, and the other. Even with a stint on the IL this year, he still crushed it. So big boy stuff from Corey Seager.
Corey Seager missed 48 days on the injured list this year. Like, Corey Seager only had 536 plate appearances, yet still finished third at the position, which to me is like just as wild as doing it with only two steals. Yes, like a .327 batting average is like freaking wild. I don't think he can do that again. But he's a 300 hitter with, I think, 40 home run power if he can stay healthy. And it's just like it's a roster construction thing. It's you do need to get your steals elsewhere if you're going to take Seager a little bit less. So I might have been a little bit wrong saying that the last few weeks. There are, just looking at this board, there are definitely other shortstops who did not steal many bases. I almost thought of shortstop as this is where you get your speed. And yes, there were guys who stole bases. We just talked about Bobby Witt, Trey Turner, Tatis, Lindor. We'll talk about CJ Abrams later, Ha-Seong Kim. There was also your Bo Bichette, your Corey Seager, your Dansby Swanson, Willie Adames, Jeremy Peña, Gunnar Henderson, guys who were drafted pretty early at the position and did not steal all that often. So that was kind of going off on a sidebar there, but that was something just looking at this board that really stuck out to me, is it's not just Seager that is kind of a stolen base suck at shortstop. There are other kind of traps there, and so you can get around it. Corey Seager, like I remember it at our Rob DiPietro early draft, I was debating between Trey Turner and Corey Seager. This was back in August before Turner really turned it on, but like it was close. And I think Corey Seager is a legitimate top 20 pick. You just need to get your steals elsewhere for next year.
And it goes back to something we've harped on before, and we'll harp on again in our 2024 previews, is it's just roster construction. You can build your team in so many different ways. You can find steals at other positions. It's not like the old days where you have to get it. It's what you're saying. I'm just like going to echo it. Like, you don't have to get it now. So, you know, we've talked about it before. Like, I have biases on certain, you know, players here and there. Maybe I got to change my biases. I'm still concerned. Like, the fact he still missed so many games, to me, he ran so pure to get to where he was.
Yeah, like, especially batting average. Yeah.
And he'd do that against, like, my concern was injuries. Well, he got injured again, but he ran beautifully when he wasn't. How often is that going to happen? That's kind of one of those things. Am I willing to just be wrong again? We'll see, probably. But it's just one of those things where we have to, you know, realize we don't just sit in one spot, and we can bounce around and do different things and find different players. And it's a beautiful game we're playing, because so much talent. And I can't remember who tweeted it the other day, and I responded saying I felt the same way. Is it's just another position we're looking at. So many guys under 30 years old, so many young players. It's like the game is so young now compared to what it used to be. Might have been Smata. It might have been, because he said he was doing so many early drafts and he realized, I'm like, it's because, you know, second base, we're talking about so many guys under 27. Here it's so many guys 29 and younger. Like, they're still so young all around the game, which as fans is awesome, as a fantasy baseball fans is great. And it just shows you why so many stats can be scattered around all these positions. There's so many just talented young players out there. Now, it's not the old days. It's like, you put the old guy at first base, you put the old guy over here, you put the young guys at the middle because they're fast. Like, that's just kind of how it worked. Now it's just a whole different world now. Like, in reality, totally just off the point here, but like 10 or 15 years ago, a person of Corey Seager's stature isn't playing shortstop. That's just the way it works. He's a bigger, taller dude. He's not playing shortstop. That just doesn't happen. So it's just kind of fun to see how it all plays out. O'Neal Cruz was the next one. I think we can skip past that. Injured, crazy, hopefully bounce back. We'll see how that works in 2024. Tommy Edman is the eighth shortstop off the board. He finished 20th overall, 27 bags, kind of helped that one out a ton. I've always been kind of one of the guys that, you know, there's a contingent that loves Tommy Edman for good reasons. I'm always one of the ones that's very skeptical, especially knowing he's not leading off all the time. I think we hit on him a bit at second base, but did you have any more on Tommy Edman?
No, not really. We talked about him last week, two weeks ago, last position recap. But just real quick to kind of recap that recap, as weird as that sounds, it's like he's been pretty stable hitter a lot with Edman from a skill standpoint. A lot with Edman was the lineup position, hit ninth more often than he did lead off this year. And the steals, like, he had always been a 30 stolen base guy the last few years. And in previous seasons, that mattered a lot more. That was a lot more valuable from a valuation standpoint. In 2023, with everyone stealing a lot more bases, Tommy Edman's 27 steals, while still pretty good, did not separate itself as his main skill from the rest of the pack. So, like, from a dollar standpoint, that's why you're seeing Tommy Edman go like 20th. You just didn't get many homers. Okay batting average, and the 27 steals aren't enough, like, by itself to really get him into the top 10.
Fully agree with you on that one. Shortstop on the board here is Dansby Swanson, first year in Chicago, ninth shortstop, finished 13th overall, 244, 22 homers, only 9 steals. Another guy that took a step back in steals, kind of a surprising thing, especially on a team that ran like Hap and some other guys, Nico Horner, we've talked about, like, these guys ran. So it wasn't a team philosophy, I would say. So it makes you wonder on a few other things with Dansby. Was he hurt? Was it just something different? He was in the middle of the order more. So maybe it was a lineup philosophy with Dansby Swanson compared to years past. But I'm not ready to give up on Dansby just yet. And now you don't have to pay a premium for him either. But it is a bit concerning that he didn't just like dominate like you'd hope for. But what's your thoughts on Dansby Swanson?
I feel like this is kind of who he is. I think from a, like, we're in draft and hold, getting into draft and hold season at this point, the volume consistency with Dansby Swanson, which I think is a skill, someone who can go out there and play every day, Marcus Semien-esque. Dansby Swanson gives you that. And I think just based on the, like, the sheer volume, let's see where Swanson is. He's 12th with almost 2,000 plate appearances over the last 3 years combined, 12th in all of baseball. That boosts your floor extremely, extremely high. Like, Swanson only hit 244. I think that goes up a little bit next season with only, like you said, Bubba, those nine steals. But if you can rack up consistently 650 plate appearances in a lineup with, they may lose Cody Bellinger, so we'll see how this ages, but a lineup at least in 2023 that was pretty damn solid. Bellinger had 81, or sorry, Swanson had 81 runs, 80 RBI, like in a quote unquote down year. For Swanson, I think he's about as safe as you can get and contributes a little bit in all five categories. I think this type of line is probably what you'll see, maybe with a few more hits going forward.
Yeah, I think for some reason, I still think he's like a 15 steals guy, but maybe I'm just over aggressive on
him. Yeah, he never really, he got 18 in 2022. Yeah. He never stole more than 10.
Maybe that's why I feel like I know I was all in on 2022. Maybe I'm just like, okay, be this guy, Dansby. Be this guy. So it could just be me. Again, I say it a lot. Broken record. It's a biases thing. And it's just...
I think you're spot on about the team thing and where he was in the lineup, because Swanson was 9 for 10 stolen bases. I don't think it was an injury or anything like that. He was plenty effective. He just didn't get a good line.
He's there to hit bombs and drive guys in. I think that's just kind of where things went. Because in the past, he was either top of the order or bottom of the order in Atlanta. And that obviously changes how... is work with your team. So I'll have to kind of see, team context is a big thing these days. Tim Anderson, RIP. Ooh. He's going to be looking for a new team. 245, one homer. Finished 47th. I would have took the under on that one. I would have thought it'd been worse. But did we do find out he was injured the entire season? Need surgery.
Yeah, man. You like that video at the live show I threw up there?
Yeah, unprovoked. Yeah, he did. I unprovoked/ I bet you've looked at that a million times going, look at, you really are good. I knew you were good. I knew there was a reason I drafted you.
I love the man too much. Fantasy player.
Some other issues with Anderson. Yeah, some other off the field issues we do not need to talk about on this show. But I guess we can talk about it quickly, but it's like, I think it's 100, well, very heavily injury related. Do you have anything else on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we talked about last week is, I mean, I showed the video and Anderson, believe him or not, at the end of the year basically said that play pretty much screwed him up. His knee was screwed up all year. And so, like, I think he was on our board. I mean, the reason we talked about him last week in Arizona was, I believe Anderson was the highest hitter ADP fall from last year. And the current ADP is like 330 or something. Like, I think Anderson's going to sign somewhere and play. I don't think he's old enough to where this falls off a cliff. And so, like, it's, and maybe this is wrong, but like, am I going to take Tim Anderson or some prospect in the late 300s who may or may not be up by like July? I'm always going to take Tim Anderson. I'm going to take the track record. I'm going to take that performance. Maybe wrong, but like, I think there's a lot of bounce back potential here to a guy who was like for years, an elite batting average guy with a little bit of pop and some bags. So I think that can come back. Maybe he just needs to get away from the White Sox. Like,
I think everybody, like, does.
Jason Benetti.
Even Jason Benetti.
The announcer.
It's like, he's an amazing human being and an amazing announcer. And dumb Reinsdorf has even bad things to say about him on the way out. It's like, that whole team is so toxic. It's unbelievable. It's so bad. And then you hear like, Giolito and some other guys on the Chris Rose rotation, they've said things without saying things about that clubhouse. It's like, it's bad there right now. It's really bad. So I don't know how that's going to take a few years to fix. As long as Reinsdorf and company are involved, that's going to be a rough go. So honestly, it's going to make me you probably still play Lou Bob and everything, but it's tough to go all in on some White Sox guys right now. I'll be totally honest.
Yep.
All right, Xander Bogaerts is a guy I just usually cross off my list. And, you know, he was good. 11th shortstop off the board. Finished 11th. That's actually pretty good.
He
was
good.
Top 12 shortstop. Yeah, 285, 19, and 19. For me, he ran a lot more. He took advantage of the stolen base situation because the previous season's 8-5, 8-4, 8. So he's done there. And that's kind of the boost. Like, we knew he was an average guy. Power was 15 to 20. Homers is kind of the thing. It was, could you steal bags? Well, he's bags. If he can steal bats consistently, He's going to be good. Do you believe he's going to steal bags consistently? That's the question. So what's your thoughts on Xander?
Really interesting. I kind of wrote off Xander, and this has happened a couple times in the past where he's playing hurt. He plays all the time. He plays hurt. And I as you were talking, I just looked up the – because I remember
he flat out came out and said he got hurt this year. Yeah,
he was hurt.
Yeah.
He played hurt. So, like, the official RotoWire blurb just, like, early June, late May, managing a wrist issue, wrist is sore. So, like, I kind of just – I don't know, forgot about him, wrote him off. But the dude went 285 1919.
He flat out said he played through it because that's when I think it was Machado and a couple other guys were already on IL.
Yeah.
So he's like, I got to stay out there for my team. I was like, whew.
But, I mean, in the second half, Bogaerts hit 318, 11 homers, 10 bags. Like, the injury did not, at least from a result standpoint, really affect him. I just feel like this is somebody who, yes, I don't think the ceiling is what it was. I wonder if these injuries are chronic throughout his career, but like,
they are.
Dude posts numbers. He posts numbers.
Yeah, but yeah, that's my concern because they are chronic. He said he battles the similar wrist injury every year. Once Machado and the company came back, he had two different, I believe, cortisone shots. He had one, played for a bit after, and they said after the second one, he said this usually does the trick. And I'm going to play the rest of the season and deal with the rest later.
Yeah,
but it seems to be a consistent thing. This wrist issue is just there.
However, so I'm looking at HQ's dollar values for Xander Bogaerts the last 5 years. $31, $30, $25, $28, $23.
That's pretty good.
Like, I don't think Bogaerts gets enough credit for really putting up consistently elite batting averages. And I've said this a few times. Yep, he's boring, but he puts up elite batting averages and does other stuff. And that is a pretty rare skill set in today's game. And Bogaerts consistently
What roto category is other stuff? I'm kidding.
Runs. He's got 90 runs. 84 runs. 83 runs. Dude runs. He gets the runs.
He's on a good offense to get the runs, especially with those taco stands in San Diego.
GMs, which another first pitch. Glad. Did you hear about the GMs meeting?
Oh, yeah. They
basically
got
all canceled. Very happy that wasn't very far from first pitch.
I got my money on Bobby Nightingale starting that one off.
Could very well.
Wrong report. He spews it out of his mouth. But yeah, the Bogaerts thing, I guess you're right. You're not paying a premium for him anymore. It was always my concern with steals. Like, he got the steals this year. If he can get a 15 plus guy, then he's 100% worth his price tag, like, easily. But even without 15 steals, like you mentioned, the values that came back in recent years, it's still a dang good ball player. So again, roster construction, I guess, because that was the one thing that always kind of kept him interesting on drafts is that batting average is consistently like 280, 290 plus with the 300 a lot of the time, and that's so hard to find, especially the deep where you go in drafts. We talk about that all the time. Xander gets you that big one. I'll save it for 2024 preview, but I have a better idea of how I would like to utilize Xander in a roster construction format, but could be interesting to think about for sure. Gunnar Henderson. This is a fun one. He was a 12th shortstop off the board. Same 80, 91 with Xander. Finished 8th overall, 255, 25, 10. So no stolen bases. Many people dropped him at one point early in the season because he was
terrible,
not good. Literally people thought he was getting toted at one point in time. FanGraphs is working extremely slow right now, so I was going to give you some stats, but he was essentially a second half of the season, maybe two-thirds of the season, absolute beast, absolute monster. And this is what has propelled him into a top three shortstop in drafts in 2024. I don't see why not. Like, I think the sky is there. I guess the question is, you're drafting him that high, will he start running more? Grand scheme of things, dude was awesome in his big first campaign.
Yeah, kind of. I'm going to pour a little bit of cold water on that one, Bubba. A little carried away. He was, yes, the last from June on, Henderson was 6 homers in June, 6 in July, 5 in August, 6 in September. Like, that was really good. The one thing we lamented with Gunnar Henderson was just his passivity. If that's a word. at the plate. He turned that around in the second half. The walk rate went from 13%, which is like super high. And for fantasy, this is one of my pet peeves for fantasy. It's probably actually a bad thing to have a walk rate that high. Cut the walk rate down to 6%, made a lot more contact in the second half. So Henderson was much more aggressive at the plate in the second half and did hit 17 home runs in the second half. So like that is pretty damn good. Maybe I should pour warmer water on Gunnar Henderson. 267 second half, 5 steals. I think the question is with Henderson for 2024 at least is what does that stolen base total look like? I think this is someone who can hit, provide that plus batting average if the second half approach sticks. Just how often is he going to run in Baltimore?
Yep, that is the conundrum. But I think we got a lot to like there with Gunnar and Adley. Yeah. And so many parts of that lineup, but there's going to be a lot of counting stat production with those guys. So big boy stuff there. We'll start moving a little quicker here because I wanted to hit the top notes here. But Willy Adames, a guy that I love, 217, 24 homers, 5 steals. Yeah, it's a big L over here. Big L. Big, big L. He was one of those guys, though, that you keep looking at his numbers from time to time and you're like, oh, it's right there. It's right there. It's right there. And then, no, it wasn't. It wasn't. I know Kidd liked him a little bit. I know Mike Kirlin was on him. It was just one of those deals with Willy Adames. Like, you look at his month-to-month stats, and it was 240, 165, 185, 222, 239, 240. Like, the 239, 240, that's kind of who he is. So he finished the year, 9 months of the year, hitting well, 7 home runs in the last 2 months of the year. Those are things you want to see from Willy Adames. But as a whole, obviously a very, very disappointing season for Willie. I'm not giving up on him yet, just for the fact that still he's 28, just turned 28. He's still super young. But there is a lot of that was a step back I wasn't looking forward to. So what's your thoughts on Willy Adames?
No, I mean, you covered it. That's your boy. You covered it well.
It was rough. The X stats always looked great. That's why I was like, it's coming. Yeah. It's coming. I mean, yep. I'm looking at him right now. It's just like, oh, it just never happened. Jeremy Pena is another guy. If I didn't get early shortstop, there's Adames and Pena for me. And I still survived the season, but not because of these guys. Pena, 263, 10 homers, 13 steals. Started out really well, faded quickly, started hitting eighth in the lineup and just kind of disappeared. So even Mauricio Dubon started playing shortstop over Jeremy Pena.
Dude, 10 home runs and 630 plate appearances. That's bad.
Yeah, especially in that ballpark.
It's bad.
And I'll admit, that was a concern many people had. I'm like, no, he can do it. 22 home runs last year. Like, he's this guy. But you looked at previous seasons and everyone was like warning me. And yeah, he reverted back to that dude. So can't deny that. He actually hit better in the second half. That's hilarious. But he had Jeremy Pena. Okay, here's a fun one. How many home runs do you think Jeremy Pena hit in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I've got it up now.
Yeah.
As many zero. As Tim Anderson.
Zero home. No, Tim Anderson had one.
Anderson had one. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah. Jeremy Pena, 0 second half home runs, but he hit 284 compared to 10 homers hitting 246 in the first half. And yet that stands out in a big way to me. I'm wondering what's going on. Better average, no power. What happened? Wow.
Yep.
I'm curious. Something to dig in on. Med Rosario, your boy, 63, 6 homers.
Yeah, I gave you the L for Willy Adames. I'll take mine with Ahmed. There you go. He's returned the favor. Put the L on the screen. Damn, man. Well done. Well done.
Yeah. But
just never happened for Rosario. Never happened for him. Got traded, didn't play regularly, and I don't know. Still buying a little bit of a dip for next year, depending what the price is, but yeah, pretty disappointing. Only 15 bags. I wanted 30 out of them and just didn't happen.
Yeah, 24th shortstop off the overall in the season. Now the 16th shortstop off the board, Carlos Correa, finished 33rd overall, hit 230, 18 homers, 0 steals. He does not steal, folks. This is who he is. But he's also hurt a ton because this is who he is. It's a shame because when he's healthy, like we say this every single season, power's there. He can drive in a ton of runs in the middle of the order. But the average, I think, is what surprised me the most this year.
My moment, my Carlos Correa moment of 2023 was when we were on a live podcast and when he signed with San Francisco. You remember that?
Yep.
You were not happy.
No, I was not.
Dodged the bullet.
If we did have to edit anything, thank God, because we don't edit things. But I controlled myself like a professional. I limited the anger. But yeah, he thank God if that didn't happen. Like, oh man, they were gonna give him what, 9 years or something? Like, oh God, I could only imagine how that would have gone. But yeah, he's done. Nico Horner, talked about him last week. He's the fifth overall shortstop at end of the season, hitting .283, home 43 stolen bases. Covered him last week though, beast. Javi Baez, the 18th shortstop off the board, finished 36, hitting .222 with 9 homers, 12 stolen bases. And if people, for some odd reason, listen to this show and don't follow Pitching Ninja, I recommend checking out. He gave out his award for something swings out of the strike zone. He used 50 cents first pitch and had a Javi Baez chasing it swing. One of the best gifts I've ever seen. Like, I highly recommend checking it out because it is perfect. Any quick thoughts on Javi Baez?
Didn't you meet Pitching Ninja? Were you telling me that?
I briefly did. I made a fool out of myself because of the World Series. Yes, I met him at the World Series. Thank you, Nick Pollock. We were all hanging out for a little bit, but he has no idea who I am, so it's okay. Like, Nick was trying to be like awesome, as Nick always is, and started to say, I'm trying to hook you up with Pitching Ninja Rob. And I'm like, yeah, he doesn't care who I am. I'm not on that level.
His loss. His loss. Yeah. We all know who you are, Bubba.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Nexius podcast runner-up. It's cool. We talked about Thairo Estrada last week. He finished 16th at shortstop. I think we both kind of agreed. Healthy, the dude, too beastly. Vaughn Grissom, this was why we'll get to Orlando Arcia later. Vaughn Grissom was what people thought would be the shortstop in Atlanta. He was the 20th shortstop off the board, 81st at the position. He did hit .280, but there's a zero and a zero next to his home runs and stolen bases. And for you trivia folks at home, he had the last at bat for the Braves in the postseason this year as well.
Yeah, and hit .280 over what? I don't know how many freaking plate appearances he had. Yeah, not many games, so whatever. But good bit of trivia. And I think who was the – I'll send it back to you. I think this was right. I don't know. Make shit up at this point. Who was the Phillies' last hitter? It was Vaughn Grissom-esque.
God dang it. It's going to bug me because it was a guy that you're like, why is he up at the plate right now?
Jake Cave.
Yep. There you go. Left side of the plate. And like, it makes you wonder, they have these expanded rosters and all these really good players, and it comes down to this. At least the D-backs had, like, I think it was Kit Marte was the last out. They had the heart of the order, like, getting toward the heart of the order. He snapped his playoff hitting streak that game in game 5, but he walked 3 times in 5 plate appearances. So his on-base streak is still alive. Yeah. Like, he's so good. It's impressive to watch. Bryce DeStott was the 10th shortstop off the board, .280, 15 and 31. Talked about him a ton last week. So he's a fun one as well. Now the moment many have been waiting for. C.J. Abrams, the 22nd shortstop off the board with an ADP of .226, finished 7th at the shortstop position this past year, hitting a whopping .245 with 18 homers and 47 stolen bases. The newly 23-year-old turned that in October, did that in 151 games. I just tremendously high on him. A comment real quick before you go, a comment I made to, I think it was Jimmy Butler in one of the Uber rides at first pitch. I said, what's really great about the Gladiators, besides just doing like 23 rounds and all this stuff, we do them so early, you look back and you go, these are some of the guys I was planting my flag on, because you trusted these guys to draft them this early in Gladiators. Yeah. Yep. I had CJ Abrams everywhere. And I was like, thank you, sweet baby Jesus. So I'm really curious to see how 2024 goes, but 2023, what are your thoughts on CJ Abrams, 7th shortstop overall?
Just a growth year, man. And we forget that CJ helped me to glory in labor. I took him in like the 20th, 21st round. He was 21 last year, like total in 2022. He was 21 years old, like totally overmatched, should not have been at the level. Folks kind of gave up on him. This season was the age 2022 year. And even the first half for CJ Abrams, like, he was dropped. We talked about Gunner being dropped. CJ Abrams was dropped. CJ Abrams hit in the first half, at least how HQ splits first and second half. I think the dates are a little bit different than what Fangraphs does, but whatever. Hit .234 in the first half with 9 steals. So 38 of CJ Abrams' 47 bags all happened in the second half. He had a 95% success rate, which is just absolutely bonkers. That's like 38 for 40 or 38 for 41, something like that. I went to college, so I can do that type of math in my head.
This is why I'm glad I have you as a partner on the show. You helped me
The strikeout rate went down in the second half by a lot in the hard contact. CJ Abrams is never going to be he's not going to be a power hitter most likely, but like there's some thump here that supports 15 to 20 homers. Like, and again, like next year it'll just be 23. Like, God, it's impressive. And he's going to be very expensive next season and should be. The Nationals are going to play him every single day at leadoff. They will suck again next year. They won't care how often CJ Abrams runs. It's like fantasy gold.
Real quick, have you looked at ADPs yet?
No, I don't have it up even.
What do you want to guess CJ Abrams ADP is?
I'll say 50.
You're close. Through 11 draft champions, 42.
42.
So yeah, into the third round, CJ Abrams.
Hey, makes sense.
Yeah, shameless plug. Lauren Auerbach, amazing human being at first pitch. She contributes at FanTrax. She does football and baseball. Big time Nationals fans. I had her on my Nationals preview this past year. We talked a lot about CJ. And one of the things we both loved about him was things you mentioned. Young, the hype train was so large in San Diego, they kind of screwed it up. And the thing you mentioned last, what I absolutely loved about taking a chance on CJ Abrams, what do the Nationals have to lose to play this guy every day? Like, you traded for him. You got to see what you got. It's that simple. They had no reason not to see what CJ Abrams had. And it's amazing. Young players, after getting some reps, you start to figure things out. Shocker. Like, they just stuck with them. Here it is. You know, other teams, like, maybe Von Grissom's really good, but the Braves are so good, they're not going to stick with them. That's just the reality of the situation. Yep. Like, the Nationals, Royals, like, some of these teams, it's like the joke we always make, Tigers. Bad teams do have good fantasy players because they have to end up playing them. It's just the way it goes. So, CJ.
And, like, there will be articles written, I'm sure, everywhere. Who's this year's CJ Abrams? Like, I think a takeaway is guys in year two can still be really good if they fail in year one. Like, Jordan Walker comes to mind. I mean, that type of player. Who was that?
Never mind. You're talking about guys for this next year. You're right.
Yeah, who sucked this year. It's just it happens. The prospect growth is not linear, and CJ Abrams, I think, is the poster boy for that.
100% on that one. Next up, Ezekiel Tovar, fun one, 15th overall at shortstop. Talked about him a bit at FPAS on last week's show. Hit 253 with 15 homers and 11 steals. For those that weren't at FPAS, Bloom, you had some nice things to say about him. So what are your thoughts on Ezekiel Tovar, who, again, he was 21 last year. My God, these boys are young.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a key component to this. This could go off next season. Tovar, we talked about him at FPAS because he was on the homer to barrel lagger list, meaning he had a bunch of barrels with not many home runs to show for it, only 15. Some of that is the park. Coors isn't as homer friendly as some like to believe, but the raw power was there. He needs to run, though. Like, he needs to run, and he still might. Like, again, he'll be 22 next season. The stolen bases, I thought Ezekiel Tovar playing every day would go 25-30. I thought he had that kind of speed. And the plate skills weren't that great either. But again, that can really change in year two. And similar parallel with CJ Abrams, what do the Rockies have to lose? Like, they're going to play Tovar every day. I think Tovar could kind of be a 2024 CJ Abrams, although he didn't quite totally fall flat on his face this year.
It's a good call. I like that a lot. Jorge Mateo finished 31st. Luis Urias finished 75th. Haesung Kim finished 9th. We talked about him last week. He had a great season. John Birdie still finished 32nd with 16 steals. But, like, do you even – I just can't draft them. I don't know about you. Like, it's just so all over the board.
Birdie?
Yeah, just too hard to roster regularly.
Yeah, he doesn't play enough.
Chris Taylor finished 27th. He was hurt a ton, but still finished with 15 homers and 16 steals for the Dodgers. Luis Rengifo was an interesting one, 264, 16, and 6, finished 28th. A lot of that damage was like in the last month to 2 months of the season. He really turned it on. And then Oswald Peraza finished 72nd. So out of that group in there, they all kind of were like, bleh. Do you have any thoughts on the bottom end of the top 30 at shortstop?
No, I don't think I've ever heard Luis Rengifo in the word interesting in the same sentence before. So
okay, well, now you're going to make me look stuff up to make him interesting, aren't you? This
setting new, I don't know, maybe he was.
Let me pull up. Because he led off perennially towards the end of the year when they traded everybody. And
that's true.
So here you go. Here you go. July, he hit 315 with six homers. August, 327 with four homers. September, 360 with two homers.
Yeah,
just didn't steal any bags. He only had one steal in the second half. But he had 11 homers in the second half and hit 318.
Yeah, all right.
That plays.
I stand corrected. Well done. That's why we keep you around.
This is where DFS comes into play. I would give two S's about Luis Rengifo.
Exactly. Otherwise. Like, I did not watch, once Ohtani went down, I did not watch a single Angels game. And that's probably when Rengifo. Yep.
And yeah, multi position eligibility. He was just one of those dudes that you were like, wow, where did this come from? And it'll make it one of those where we'll see how the next season goes, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, he'll be second, third, short, and outfield next year.
Massive. Like, he's a great DC type play. Yeah. Phenomenal. Because he helps you fill that roster out big time. And just for fun, I guess, since I have the ADP up here, he is currently 288. So he's not even that expensive. So he's going 100 picks or 50 picks ahead of Tim Anderson. So you got that going for you. All right. Let's talk about some guys that were drafted outside of the top 30 or not even drafted at all, potentially, that finished very, very well. And this is one when I mentioned I texted Ryan about Orlando Arcia. Ryan came back with this gentleman who is 28 years old. He'll be 29 in January. And that's J.P. Crawford. He finished the season as the 14th shortstop off the board with an AP of 415, hit 266 with 19 homers, two steals, and scored 94 runs for the Mariners. OBP skills off the chart for J.P. Crawford. What's your thoughts here? Because you actually, if you you said it in FPAS, like, you don't have a team, but if you had to pick one, it's probably the Mariners that you kind of go with. So you at least kind of have them in your backyard. So maybe you know a little more, maybe you don't. I don't know. What's your thoughts on J.P. Crawford?
It's just interesting. Like, we think J.P. Crawford was looked at as a boring veteran. You know what you're going to get. Doesn't always happen that way. Even the boring old veterans can change things and be a lot better. And in J.P. Crawford's case, that happened. Now, I think for next year, I think this was J.P. Crawford's career year, but it's just interesting how sometimes you just draft guys for volume and just to have a steady spot in the lineup and they kind of go off, because this stuff's hard to predict for the prospects that we've been talking about, but even also sometimes the veterans. There was the drive line narrative with J.P. Crawford, which I think is interesting. Tim Anderson went to drive line as well this past season. So I did notice, I think Jeff Zimmerman put something out. It sounds like he's doing a study on over the past three seasons, who has gone to drive line and when, and what that following season looks like. Just like we talked about with Lil Book of Calm on our last show with the free agent contract year thing. It's just interesting to see drive line's another example of that, of yes, there's this narrative out there. What does the actual numbers look like? What's the track record of this guy? So that'll be interesting if and when it comes out. But I don't know. Crawford, I honestly, my opinion on him doesn't change that much with this season. It was a great year, but I think it was also a career year. Probably not in at whatever his ADP will be, because just sheer regression. I think this is mostly the same guy.
Yep, I'm kind of with you there. It's one of those, if you can get him late as a middle infielder, sweet. Am I going to force my hand on J.P. Crawford? No. So kind of see where it goes there. Ellie De La Cruz, 7th shortstop ranked on Razzball at the end of the season, ADP of 431. I think if you're listening to a show right now, this time of year, you know who Ellie De La Cruz is. You know the fireworks that came with him. You saw the downfall towards the end. There's been charts everywhere that maybe his patience was better, but his decisions were not great. Depends on what you want to look at. There's so many factors to Ellie. We can't deny the talent, but is it going to transpire to fantasy greatness? That is the question. So what's your thoughts on Ellie De La Cruz? I had zero shares because I did not have enough money to get Ellie De La Cruz. And quick thing, Rob McCabe, who had talked on the show a lot, gave a presentation at FPAS.
Yep.
He looked at players that benefited the most, in 12-team leagues on OCs via FAB. like out of the top, I think like 30th percentile finishers or whatever, Elie De La Cruz was not on any of those teams. That is quite telling in the whole. Tanner Scott was the most added player on those 30%. So that goes to show you things. But back to your thoughts on Elie De La Cruz.
Yeah, just super polarizing. I haven't really formed an opinion on De La Cruz for next year yet. But like, whatever your opinion is, like 13 homers, 35 steals, and 427 plate appearances, like this could be a first round guy, especially in that park with that lineup. I need to dive in and look a little bit more. Yeah, there's some good stuff. Like Scott Chu has put out some really good rolling graphs on Elie and maybe some positive information late in the season, but still need to dig into that. I was considering Elie De La Cruz at the 1-2 wheel in our meatball draft back in August and did Trey Turner and would have taken Corey Seager over him as well. And again, that was back in August before things fell apart. So like, I can't see myself taking Elie De La Cruz in the first three rounds, which is probably where he's going to go. Given
ADP,
the ceiling.
ADP of 21. ADP of
21. So it's mid second round. Yep. I get it. Yep. I get it. It's just not the way that I build teams. Not to say my way is right or wrong, but I if it's second round, I'm not doing that.
Yep. His teammate Matt McClain finished 18th at shortstop, ADP of 747. Didn't we talk about McClain last week, or we put him off of this week?
We talked about him last week. Yeah, we talked about him at second base.
Well, yeah, so he was right behind Elie. Do you have any other thoughts on that, or are you good there?
I'm pretty much good there. Still second and short for next season. Ended injured the oblique, but I don't know. Hell of a year. 16 homers, 14 bags, 290 batting average. Like, you can kind of prorate that out. Wouldn't recommend it. I don't think that pace is going to hold. But superb year for Mr. McClain at a relative bargain in terms of FAB compared to Elie, but also all of the starting pitchers that were seemingly going every single week. McClain was like the impact bat to get given the price in FAB.
For sure. Other two mentioned earlier in the pod, Anthony Volpe, 22nd shortstop, ADP at 329. Orlando Arcia, 23 overall at shortstop, ADP of 611. Arcia had 17 homers, hitting 264. I'm not buying that. Maybe Volpe's worth buying, but any thoughts on those two?
No, just fascinating that those are the two guys that are next to each other as quote unquote breakouts, but even just finish that low, that high for RC and that low for Volpe. Like, Volpe, that's tough, man. You could see 30-30 next year. And again, to go back to CJ Abrams' example, Anthony Volpe was 22 years old and like, hey kid, you're starting shortstop for the New York Yankees. Like, imagine the microscope, the pressure that all of that entails. 283 OBP, like that's really bad. However, the Yankees stuck with him, and I think they stuck with him as a rookie at 283 OBP. I mean, they probably will in his sophomore year too. So I don't know. Just fascinating to see what Volpe. I just didn't realize, and maybe again, it's a Razzball valuation thing, just really devaluing that 209 batting average, which not only is 209 bad, 600 plate appearances of a 209 batting average is like, that's kind of death. Yeah, that's death. Yeah. So
yeah, that destroys your team. So yeah, no, I don't want anything to do with him, but I could see, it's like we just talked about the C. Abrams of the world. Why couldn't Volpe be that guy? Like, that's, if they're going to play him, why couldn't he be? I don't know. That's just a what if scenario. A couple listener questions here, then we'll head on out. Ryan Ireland asks, who is your favorite post 300 ADP shortstop target? It's not pretty. The one that stands out to me, and I'll be, people call me a homer all you want, but I am high on Marco Luciano. He has an ADP of 463, supposed to be the everyday starting shortstop for the Giants. Most of these guys coming down the list here are prospects or platoon guys. So for me, like, there's some really good prospects down here. Don't get me wrong. Like Colson Montgomery, we just watched him in Arizona. Dude's a beast. There's a bunch of good ones here, but I'm going to go with the homer play, Marco Luciano.
Dude, too bad your boy Rengifo is at 290.
I know. I laughed. Like, he doesn't even qualify. That good, Bloomfield. That good. Doesn't even qualify post 300.
Just because I'm like a stubborn, getting old Man.
Oh, I got to guess. Is it Ahmed Rosario by chance?
Ahmed Rosario and Tim Anderson. Let's do this. Yeah. Buy the dip, yeah, man. Buy the dip.
Yep. That's fine. That's fine.
Those two guys. I mean, your other options are like it's Bryce Terang. He's not going to play. Mason Wynn could go off. It's just not someone I would.
It's a ton of young players.
Zach Neto's okay, but like there's just not Orlando Arcia. I mean, I'm taking Rosario and Anderson over. Yeah. Over him. So maybe Ezekiel Duran's interesting. Third base, second base, outfield eligible at 379 ADP. If he gets enough playing time in Texas, that is an issue. But no, I'll go Ahmed and Anderson, my guys there.
All right. Another question comes from @futures_bet. How about why CJ Abrams will be a top five shortstop in 2024? Thanks.
Already being drafted as one, it sounds like. And I mean, we talked about him, and you could draw from what I said there and say, yes, yep. CJ Abrams will be a top five shortstop.
If he somehow finds 25 to 30 home run power, which he's so young, he could.
I mean, he had 18 this year. It's not that much of a stretch.
He's Bobby Witt minus the great batting average. Like he's right there. He's 30-50 potentially. That's
and Abrams stuff. Like, that's an interesting comp, because Abrams was like a top three prospect fantasy wise.
They were talking about a lot of conversations, those two, like together a lot. That's why people forget things so quickly when one of the guys takes off the whole quote unquote group. Like, I hate to bring this to golf, but most of us, you know, that Ryan and I like golf. Like, when it first happened, it was like Morikawa, Wolf, Hovland, all these guys, and a couple take off, and you're kind of wondering where the rest of them are. And then all of a sudden, after like 3 years, they're all like Hovland's now the beast, and they're all really good. And it's just some guys take a little longer age, but all his talent is the way I see it. So
my example that I'll use forever, baseball example, was first pitch. I forget exactly when, like maybe 2018, 2017. It was 50-50 split between Ronald Acuna and Victor Robles as to who the top prospect was. In fantasy, smart people on both sides of that aisle, and it's just fascinating to look back at that.
And that goes against my claim that talent is talent, because apparently talent never found Victor Robles. So yeah, there goes that one. Nope. That'll do it, Bloomfield. Final thoughts on shortstop. Pretty top heavy, but there were sprinkles. Kind of a common theme, as you mentioned, the market is very sharp these days.
Yes, the success at the top, there were more. I feel like there were more busts at shortstop than at other positions. It was very boom or bust. You had a lot of late breakouts with like Abrams and De La Cruz, McClain, Ha-Seong Kim, Nico Hoerner. There were a lot of kind of busts too. So I don't know. I mean, I kind of said before the season, shortstop wasn't as deep as it was thought to be. And maybe that turned out right. I don't know. But a lot of boom and bust, and a lot and more low stolen base guys than I thought. I thought there were a lot more steals at shortstop than there were in 2023, but still had plenty of, you know, you had your 340 stolen base guys and Witt, Hoerner, Abrams. You had a bunch of 30 stolen base guys, but again, you also had a good number of like single stolen base guys, and that's tough from a roster construction standpoint to build around that at other positions. You just need to know what you're getting into.
Yeah, it'll be fun as we keep diving into, you know, third base next, and then we'll get to the outfield just to kind of see if we see common trends. I think we will, but at the same time, is do we find other areas to get maybe steals or power and just kind of put all of it together at the end type scenario? So it'll be real interesting to see how that plays out. But as Ryan mentioned at the beginning of the show, we'll be back with you guys next Tuesday. And then next Thursday as well. So we'll have third base on Tuesday, out preview part or review part one on Thursday. And we'll get those coming at you. I'll say the show line this time. If you guys rate and review the podcast, it would be much, much appreciated. We would like that quite a bit. But any final thoughts on the show? I know we talked shortstop, but are you good on anything else before we head on out?
No, just thank you to everyone who came out to the live show. Like that was the highlight of my first pitch doing that. It was freaking, we had signs in the back. I got to go get my sign, my Bloom Board sign, B-O-R-E-D. Yep. It's in with That's my so golf good. Clubs. I got to go pull that out. But
mine's with my clubs too. I just thought about that. I need to go
get. Is that where you put them? I rolled it up and stuck it in my golf. Like, I was just the place.
I'm nervous to see what it looks like, because it was funny. When I got my carrying bag out, I kind of cleaned it out, and I realized that there was still the tag in there. So this thing was inspected when I came back from Arizona last time. So I'm really curious to see what that thing looks. I'm really curious to see what that looks like right now.
Imagine you're like TSA. They inspect your bag and they pull out this sign that says Bubba drafts catchers in the first round. Like, what do you do with that?
You probably report. Like, is this code?
You get fingerprints. You get fingerprints on this thing. And
sir, over here, please. Yeah. We you need to talk. To you clearly have a problem, sir. We are here to help.
Yeah. Some of those signs people might actually gotten pulled out of TSA for.
Yeah, that is true. Some of the actions. That's good.
Some of the actions. Some of the actions as well. Oh, man.
But we'll wrap it up on that note. Make sure y'all follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at B. Dientrich. Thank you for listening. As always, we had the YouTube chat was there. People were watching. It was great. And get ready to download it on Friday. But this was Bubba the Bloom, episode 82, your 2023 Fantasy Baseball Shortstop Review. Catch y'all later.